Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
But we do.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. How are you? We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's a bright, beautiful day outside. A little cool. First major snowstorm of this winter season bearing down on America. Good luck to you this weekend. Won't be so bad here. I believe that's an apt description, is it not, Kim? First major snowstorm of this winter season?
I would call it that. Yeah, I mean, especially in LaPorte County, I think they're expecting about five to six inches, so I would consider that major.
But what'd you say the worst of it is in the Chicagoland area?
Chicagoland area, 1 to 2 inches possible.
Oh, yeah. We can deal with that.
Yeah. It's on a weekend, so that makes it easier.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yes, it is.
By the way, when we were in Elgin, at Elgin Community College for our Thomas Jefferson show, a friend of ours handed out from an organization called Freedom Factor pocket constitutions and declarations. They're combined in one handy little booklet. On the inside jacket, you'll see a little ad for the Mincing Rascals podcast that I do. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals or listen to it wherever you listen to finer podcasts. We are the Mincing Rascals, a roundtable with Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and Scott Stantis. All of them except Steve from the Chicago Tribune. And we kick around local news, national news, stuff like that. So we've got the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence there. It's a nice little treat for the folks that go to the show because they're there seeing Thomas Jefferson, and he obviously wrote the Declaration and has a thing to, or two to say about the Constitution. So they all got their copies, but they gave me a little case of these. So we are autographing them and sending them to you. The details are on my Facebook page. Now, none of us are the original authors of the Constitution or the Declaration. We didn't sign anything then, but I'd love for you to get this handy little guide, and all you have to do is send me your email address, and the details are on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. There's also the link to our latest edition of the Mincing Rascals, and actually, it's not our best effort because Scott and Steve and I are there, but Kristen and Eric aren't. And
well, the effort was there. It was our hardest effort.
Right. Well, yeah, I said it wasn't our best effort. Well, it wasn't our best effort. We made a great effort, but it wasn't our best product. I'll say that.
No, mostly Stantis.
By the way, I got the new Corey Lewandowski book, Let Trump Be Trump, the inside story of his rise to the presidency. There's a picture of Donald Trump with his hat on, Make America Great Again. He's doing the thumbs up. You can imagine what it looks like. In the background is a flapping American flag. And there's Corin Lewandowski and David Bossy. Bossy served as president of Citizens United. He's a Fox contributor. And Lewandowski is now president of his own company, but of course for a very brief time. Can you imagine? Corey Lewandowski was the chief political advisor and campaign manager to Donald J. Trump for president. And on the inside, the very first page, it begins with a quote from Donald Trump on his victory speech November 8, 2016. When Trump won the election, he said the following, "I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans. And this is so important to me. For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and help so that we can work together and unify our great country." And then Lewandowski begins, "Donald J. Trump could not have struck a more perfect tone in acknowledging his victory on election night. It's hard to imagine that what one might say in accepting a job, at which so many were counting on you to succeed and so many others never wanted you to have in the first place. We'd like to think Americans of all political beliefs felt a little bit of optimism for our great country after President-elect Trump made his acceptance speech." Boy, he wasn't at my election night party, was he, Steve? "In part because of the media coverage, it was one of the most bitter, contentious presidential elections in recent memory. in recent memory. Well, we only have an election every 4 years, Corey. And the Obama ones, you know, weren't this. Even the Bush and Clinton ones weren't this. I think that, yeah, qualifies as recent memory. He said that night, at that moment, it was important to see to the country, to see Mr. Trump the same way we had seen him for the last 2 years. Gracious, respectful, and speaking to and for all Americans, Republican, Democrat, and Independent. And then he goes on to write a book about him. Interestingly, it's not a big book. It's only 240 pages. And the type's pretty big, and the pages aren't that long. So I may breeze through this weekend and see what they have to say. The review in the Tribune today is very interesting. The review in the Tribune today from Washington Post, Michael Cranish, says, sooner or later, this is a quote from the book, everybody who works for Donald Trump will see a side of him that makes you wonder why you took a job with him in the first place. His wrath is never intended as any personal offense, but sometimes it can be hard not to take it that way. The mode that he switches into when things aren't going his way can feel like an all-out assault. Lewandowski, they write, provides a largely admiring portrait of his former boss, saving the skewer for score-settling anecdotes about Paul Manafort. He's still mad at him. In one of the most striking passages of the book, the co-authors describe a scene in which Steve Bannon is read the first few paragraphs of a forthcoming story of a New York Times story, a reporter laying out allegations that Manafort had received $12.7 million payment from a Ukrainian political party. Does Trump know about this? Bannon asked. What's to know? It's all lies, Manafort replied. The authors write that Bannon knew what he had in his hand. It was an explosive page one story. Lewandowski wrote that the cuts that you would suffer from Donald Trump were deep, but it was only one of a thousand. In fact, when Lewandowski got fired, he says that Donald Jr. was the one who fired him. The president himself did not do that. In another episode, Lewandowski describes how staffer Sam Nunberg was purposely left behind at a McDonald's once because Nunberg's special order burger was taking too long. Leave him, Trump said. Let's go. And they did. Trump's fast food diet is a theme. On Trump Force One, there were four major food groups. I've been misrepresenting them in my telling of this story, Steve. I hadn't gotten a copy until just today, but they remind us in the book that they are McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Diet Coke, and I had previously said chocolate shakes, but they are pizza. The plane's cupboards were stacked with Vienna fingers, potato chips, pretzels, and many packages of Oreos because Trump, a renowned germaphobe, would not eat from a previously opened package. The book notes that the orchestrating and timing of Mr. Trump's meals was as important as any other aspect of his march to the presidency. They describe the efforts that Lewandowski and other top aides went through to carefully time their delivery of hot fast food to Trump's plane as he was departing his rallies. And they also write about Hope Hicks. One of her jobs was to make sure that Trump's suits were pressed.
Oh, good. This is my favorite part.
When they flew on his plane.
I was just Googling this to make sure I remembered it right.
You did. You just couldn't remember the name yesterday. And it's Hope Hicks. Trump would yell, get the machine. And then Hope would take out the steamer and start steaming Mr. Trump's suit while he was wearing it. She would steam the jacket first and then sit in a chair in front of him and steam his pants. It was Hicks who on October 7th took a call from Washington Post reporter about the video from the Access Hollywood story in which Trump boasted about how he could grab women by the genitals. Trump looked at a transcript and said, that doesn't sound like something I would say. They also note that when she got the job, she had previously been a model. She'd worked in his company. And when Trump said, you are going to work on the campaign, she said, oh, which one, Doral? And he said, no, for me, I'm running for president. She actually did not anticipate that she would get the job that she did. They say that she's not only attractive, but has a photographic memory. in the book, Let Trump Be Trump.
Okay, and yesterday she emerged as what could be a very key figure in the investigations because Donald Trump Jr. reportedly, after his House testimony, said that he told Hope Hicks was the go-between between him and his dad about that June meeting in 2016.
Oh, the one where his dad gave him some advice on how to handle this thing?
No, the one with the Russians, Don Jr. and the others meeting with the Russians.
Yeah.
Don Jr. said, did you talk to your dad? He said, not directly. Apparently the go-between was Hope Hicks.
Yeah.
So Hope Hicks might know what Don Jr. told or wanted Don Sr. to know about that meeting and might have been the conduit for it.
You know, it's interesting to me. There was two interesting stories in the paper today. One is about the WikiLeaks document leak, and another one is more about what you're speaking about. But there's a story, just this is in the Washington Post today. An executive at a leading Russian social media company, their equivalent of Facebook, reached out to the Trump campaign. This is the Russian equivalent of Facebook. It's in Russian. It's read by people in Russia and who speak Russian around the world, including Russian Americans who may vote in the election. And so an executive at VK, Russia's equivalent to Facebook, emails Donald Trump Jr. and Dan Scavino, the social media director. And he said, hey, I want to work with you guys. Let's promote some stuff out on the Internet. And while Don Jr. didn't seem to be as interested in it, Scavino was totally interested in it. And now they're wondering if this doesn't show another link between the Russians and the Trump campaign. Here's what I want to say about that. We don't know that much about this yet. In fact, the person who is pushing this, his identity isn't even clear. But if the Russian equivalent of Facebook reaches out to your campaign and says, hey, listen, we want to push stories in favor of your candidate, I think you take that call and I think you say yes. There's nobody saying, at least yet, that they were saying, let's tell lies or let's create false stories or let's do something illegal. The WikiLeaks stuff isn't what I'm talking about right now. They're simply saying, hey, we are Russian Facebook. Let's go ahead and work together.
Well, there's a big difference there, I think. I haven't read that story, but, you know, there's a difference between a U.S. Facebook and a Russian Facebook. I'm assuming that that would be under government control.
Maybe.
Like so many of their other media outlets. And then so that would be you soliciting the help of a foreign adversarial government in your campaign. I don't know if I would take that call.
I see your point. Well, you know what it is? I thought about this when you mentioned Hope and Hicks, because I've long thought this. Don Jr. And his brother, I think, are other examples as well. Corey Lewandowski may be an example of this. And that is this, that however allied you are, however loyal you are to the president, however smart you are, if you don't know this game, if you don't know how politics are played and what the laws and rules are, then you could be very, very vulnerable. So I could see them saying, meet with a Russian lawyer. Sure, that can't hurt. Do we really have to tell the FBI? And you don't know. If you've got amateurs that are in those high-profile positions, you're vulnerable. And I think that's what we're starting to see. It may well be that they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. They thank their lucky stars. People are dropping stuff in their lap. But they're not so corrupt as they are just amateurs. Maybe. They could go with that. It's 121. Did you see what Bitcoin is doing? I've got to get some Bitcoin. Holy cow. It went up like 40% in 40 hours this week. It just went zoom. So should you get some? You know, we talked to a guy in town who trades Bitcoin the other day. He was just on CNBC. I've got a question or two for him in a minute. On a phone line, Bobby Aquino is the chief market strategist at a company called Path Trading Partners. He was on with us a week or so ago to try and explain to me what a Bitcoin is and how that works. And he was moderately successful, which is more a reflection on me than it is on you, Bob.
Well, I appreciate that. I love being moderate.
Well, so tell me, I mentioned a moment ago that Bitcoin, I'm looking for the number here. I had it written down on a piece of paper, and now I just moved it away. How much did Bitcoin go up this week?
Well, we had 2 days in a row of up 35%. Two in a row, so 70% in 2 days. However, it has been so up and down that, honestly, I've lost track of where it is up on the week. I know that it was trading 3,000 in September. and we went as high as 19,000 this week, depending on the exchange you were looking at.
As of close yesterday, was it 16.1? But yeah, was it? It crossed over 19,000 yesterday, and you said in September it was at 3,000.
Yes.
So 3,000 to 19,000. So in other words, if I had a Bitcoin or a share of a Bitcoin, I would have made six times my money then, right?
That's correct.
Did you do that? Did you have some money at 3,000 and see it go up to 19,000?
We did not. Okay, so I've been doing this about 26 years, and I can count on one hand the amount of times that I've bought the low and sold the high of any particular move. So the answer is no. I didn't have any at 3,000 that I held until 19,000. We've been slowly exiting our Bitcoin, probably since around the time I was on your show.
Because you thought it was as high as it was going to get?
No, not necessarily. I think the technology behind Bitcoin is something that is lasting. However, when you see moves like this, they're not real. They're not based on the idea that Bitcoin is now more acceptable as a currency or as a technology or as an entity. They're based on people getting in and speculating, and they're not price sensitive anymore. I am price sensitive. So when people involved in the markets day to day are not price sensitive, I'm out.
So you're happy to leave some of that money on the table if you don't
Absolutely.
Think fundamentally it's legitimate. But they say that it in fact is that since the major exchanges are now going to trade in Bitcoin, people are going, this is going to be real. It's going to be even. I mean, if it's at 3,000 without the exchange, imagine what its value will be if it has the, you know, the reputation of the mercantile exchange behind it.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, John, and say that I think that once the exchange products, and there's three of them launching, four if you count Nadex, the North American Derivative Exchange, all launching a product within the next, let's call it 20 days, although it'll probably be quicker than that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's going to actually push the Bitcoin cash, the actual Bitcoins, lower. And the reason I say that is because the CME Group, the CBO, all the futures exchanges in Chicago made their living on hedging. That's what these contracts are being put in place for people to be able to offset the risk of the Bitcoin going from 19,000 back down to 3,000, which can happen. But the futures contracts will have circuit breakers in them, like normal markets, like the equity markets do, right, and like most futures contracts do. So it's not really a solid hedge for someone who's holding Bitcoin, because Bitcoin can fall to zero, but the futures contract will not. Because so I think the large institutions are going to come in and sell huge portions of the actual Bitcoin and buy the futures contract as their hedge.
I'm going to ask you two quick questions. I need two quick answers. Yeah. Your opinion about the viability of Bitcoin has not changed since we spoke last.
No.
And you also what do you think a fair valuation of a Bitcoin is right now?
There's no way for me to know that. I just know that it is not being bid up right now because it's being accepted more places. That's not what's happening.
It's speculation. It's just gambling right now.
Correct.
By the way, Bitcoin's year-to-date gain, as of close yesterday, 1,560%.
That's worse than the tech bubble, John. That's way worse.
Yeah, and in fact, maybe not even good, you know, for the commodity itself.
Listen, I'm old enough to remember that stuff. I remember people making money every single day on stocks like Pets.com and Webvan and Extreme Networks. And if you look at charts of those, all of those went through the roof where Bitcoin is now. And then going forward on those charts, they all went basically down back to zero. Now, Bitcoin's not going to zero. But there are people who right now believe that it can't go down. Anytime I've seen a market like that in a quarter of a century, where people believe it can't go down, that's exactly what happens.
What was the mother of them all? I remember the Super Bowl commercial for Pets.com.
Pets.com was the mother of them. That's the example everybody uses, the sock puppet, and they really didn't have anything else of value.
All right. Well, but they had Pets.com. They had that URL.
Yeah, they definitely had that.
And they knew if you had a good website, you could...
At the end of their name.
It's nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time, Bob.
Good to talk to you, John. Yeah,
Bob is, I want to make sure I get this right, the chief market strategist at Path Trading Partners. He talks to us sometimes about Bitcoin, and sometimes I understand it. Almost exactly an hour from now, we'll do our Bright Side. It's one of the great things we do on the radio in Chicago. Folks call in, tell us something that's making them smile. And not only is it good for you when you do it, but it's good just to sit back and listen to it. You can text or call in an hour. What's your bright side? What's some good news? We could always use that towards the end of the day and the end of the week, and we'll do that again in about an hour. We'll also visit with Nicholas Schuler, who is the Inspector General for the Board of Education. He found fault with what Forrest Claypool, the president of the Board of Education, did at the Chicago Public Schools. And my question for him is, does he think that Forrest Claypool should keep his job? I've got a couple of other questions, too. Tribune editorialized today and said, keep him there. He's been a good guy. But, you know, it's just amazing to me. I mean, I've had a number of people tell me, Forrest Claypool, this is a rich history of service to the people of Chicago. And he's a good, smart guy. People make mistakes. But I just don't understand how or why this one happened. If the inspector general is asking you a question and it's there, and it's an ethical investigation, lying would be the least ethical thing you could do. And I just didn't see the upside to the lie anyway. I'm a little confused by this story. You know another story that's confusing me today? The Toys R Us story. Did you see this on the business section of the paper? Toys R Us went bankrupt. I didn't know that. Haven't been buying a lot of toys lately. Although I was in Target the other day and walked slowly past a race car set. You just can't buy me enough race car sets. Anyway, so Toys R Us goes bankrupt. In the bankruptcy proceedings, they say, okay, well, let's go ahead and have as good a Christmas as we can, sell as many toys as we can, and then that will help pay the creditors. I mean, you know, there's loans that are out on a company, and when a company goes bankrupt, that means they can't meet all their obligations. They've got bills to pay. So let's have a gigantic Christmas, make as much money as we can. And then if the company dissolves after that, fine, but at least we will have netted a lot of money. Now, if you're an executive with Toys R Us, what's your incentive? You're out the door. Your company ain't going to be here in March, or at least you won't. So really, you're just trying to hit the road and get out of Dodge. So they said, okay, to incentivize these top executives, you know where this is going, right? To incentivize the top executives, let's give them bonuses. And if they meet a certain goal, in this case, $500 million, if we do $550 million, then we'll give you guys bonuses. So now you'll really work hard to make as much money for the creditors and the people that are owed money. 17 executives will make $14 million if Toys R Us hits its goal. Now, when I get to be king someday, and I'm not yet, the paperwork is tied up in Cook County, but it would seem to me that if you're going bankrupt, then we shouldn't be paying you on your way out the door million-dollar bonuses. And so then what do? You get an attorney to explain the rationale behind that, and here's what their attorney said. Now more than ever, the senior management team must be properly motivated and incentivized to handle the panoply, that's P-A-N-O-P-L-Y, panoply of responsibility.
Panoply.
See, you don't need that. You don't need a panoply.
Play on words.
Well, how is that a play on words? I mean, it reminds you of Monopoly?
Yeah.
How about a bunch of? Now more than ever, the senior management team must be properly motivated and incentivized to handle the whole bunch of responsibilities attendant to their two full-time jobs of leading the debtors through this restructuring and at the same time implementing worldwide strategy to increase sales. Okay, so, yeah, you got to get us out of, you know, we got to go through bankruptcy and you got to sell a bunch of toys. But I'll bet the senior executives are paid a fortune to begin with. And evidently, they weren't doing a really good job because the company went bankrupt. So then what do we do to the people who run the company into bankruptcy? We say, we'll give you $1 million more as a bonus if you just promise to stay through the new year. When I get to be king, do you have my new When I Get to Be King music ready, Elif? Elif's busy doing something else. When I get to be king, that kind of thing is not going to happen. Interestingly, the judge said the bankruptcy judge was overseeing this said, he says, I'm kind of shocked, but the creditors don't mind you skimming $17 million off the top, $14 million. He said, if you take $14 million off, what do you say about that? And they go, yeah, we're good with that. I just don't live in that world. I don't understand that. I mean, I do, but I would just like to think that the executives would just want to do as good a job as they can because that's what they're being paid to do, even to the last day. And you shouldn't have to give them a $1 million bonus to do as good a job as they can do. And remember, if they had done a much better job, we wouldn't be in this pickle to begin with. At least that's my take on that. There's a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal today. You know, the have you been following this thing where the tobacco settlement? Is this the tobacco settlement? Who's this? This is the full-page ad. It's just a handful of words in the Wall Street Journal. A federal court has ordered Philip Morris USA, Lorillard, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, and Altria to make this statement about the addictiveness of smoking and nicotine. That's the front half of the paper. A federal court has ordered us to say this, which makes it sound less than sincere. But then anyway, they say this. Smoking is highly addictive. Nicotine is the addictive drug in tobacco. Cigarette companies intentionally design cigarettes with enough nicotine to create and sustain addiction. It's not easy to quit. And finally, they wrote, when you smoke, the nicotine actually changes the brain. That's why quitting is so hard. So I guess that's good information for us all to have.
That's interesting. That's pretty to the point, but in European countries, on the box, there's either a picture of black lungs or it says smoking kills.
Yeah, I've seen those.
That's blunt, too.
We don't have, yeah. Listen, I don't know what works. I'm not sure that a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal is reaching impressionable young people who are thinking about taking up smoking, but it's just, it's a lot of money spent, and there it is. A federal court has ordered us to say this about the addictiveness of smoking. It's highly addictive. We intentionally designed these things so you would get hooked and that it's hard to quit. And by the way, once you're smoking, your brain is different now, so quitting will be very, very difficult. I just hope they're putting it in places besides the Wall Street Journal. It's 1:48 on WGN. Oh, and we have a non sequitur of the day coming up. It's your chance to win a swell prize. In 3, 2, 1, hit it.
It's your non sequitur of the day.
Here we go.
Come on, it's time to play.
Listen carefully.
Non sequitur.
Here comes.
They have to get me dragging, screaming.
It's your non sequitur of the day.
What was that?
Come on, it's time to play.
Heard previously
non-sequitur
on this radio station.
They have to get me dragging, screaming.
They have to get me dragging and screaming was previously said on this radio station. Today, in fact, if you can tell me who said that and what that person was talking about, I have a $100 gift card for you at MJ Miller & Company, Barrington's oldest and finest jeweler. Oh, man, do they got good stuff there. We've got a $100 gift card for you to go shopping. But you have to tell me who is saying this and what the person is talking about.
They have to get me dragging, screaming.
They have to get me dragging and screaming about what? Do you think you know? Call me now, 312-981-7200. All right. Let's see if we can get an answer on the quiz. Here is the quiz question. Hit it, Elif.
They have to get me dragging, screaming.
Question is, who's saying that? Let's start with line. Is that, what is that name? Is that Mark? The glare in this studio is such that, and you know, it's the sort of thing that we need to fix, but we're moving in a few months anyway, so I don't think there's any fix for it. But now, in wintertime, with the sun at a severe angle, we get glare in ways that we didn't previously, and the sun comes through these showcase studio walls of glass. It shines directly on the computer screens and monitors, and you cannot read what is in front of you when you do this show. So I think it's Mark on line one. Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yes, John. King John.
How
great
are
you?
So,
good, thank you.
What is the correct answer for $100 at MJ Miller & Company?
Oh, that would be Dr. Oz explaining how he's got to be kicking and screaming to get to the doctor's office himself.
Yeah, doctors, he said, are the worst patients. They don't want to go. They have to be dragged kicking and screaming. He told that to our Pete McMurray for Steve Cochran today. You were listening earlier, right?
Oh, I listen every day, all day.
Attaboy. Well, listen, I want you to either get the catalog. This would be my recommendation. We're going to get you that gift certificate. You strum through there and see what you like for $100 or more, okay?
Beautiful.
Okay, hold on.
That was your non-sequitur of the day. Hey, hey. For all the winners, I say hooray. Non-sequitur.
I believe that about doctors, too. Washington Post has a story today about what it would take for a Democrat to win in Alabama. It's one of these long charticles. But they say that Alabama works like this. It has what they call the Black Belt, the rich, fertile soil of the South, where the cotton grows best, goes through Mississippi and Alabama and the Carolinas and so forth. And years, hundreds of years ago, that's where the slaves were bought to pick the cotton. Those people still live there in this Black Belt through the South. And it is there that you're more likely to get a Democratic vote. So the question is, in a special election where voter turnout is not expected to be as high, will they be able to get the blacks in the Black Belt to vote in Alabama? They say that also the question is, will the whites, which are in the northern and southern parts of the state and more rural areas, will they be inclined to turn out for a special election, particularly since they're a little disenchanted with their candidate right now? And when people aren't real sincere in a special election, they're much less inclined to go out and vote. So that's a big question as well. In Alabama, Washington Post writes, Roy Moore is not a popular Republican, popular enough to win, but unpopular enough to lose a significant number of his party's votes in the process. They also say that maybe the election will turn on the white urbanites of Alabama, and there are some who previously would vote Republican. They always vote Republican, but this time will the higher educated in Alabama be so disgusted with Roy Moore that they at least won't vote for him, or maybe they might even vote for a Democrat. Be the first time that happened in a long time.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
Here's a big thought. The bright side comes your way in about a half an hour. I want to hear some good news in your world, something you're smiling about.
Oh, have mercy.
And then we'll smile, too. Here's a fun thing to think about. This could be a bright side. At my house, we now have... And you could have one, too. A hot chocolate bar. Woo-hoo! Brenda took a little place in the kitchen where we normally have some stuff. She cleared it all off, and then she put a great big thing of the powdered hot chocolate mix that she makes, and then another big glass container of marshmallows, and then we have a little bottle there of schnapps, and then some mugs on a little mug tree and napkins. And you walk by, and it looks really holidayish and delightful, and the next thing you know, you've got yourself a hot mug of cocoa. We have a hot chocolate bar at my house, and you could too. Yes, friends, that's a bright side for me. I've been having one of those every night. Get the big old mug, boil some water. I prefer not to nuke it. And then I go ahead and put a whole bunch of that stuff in there and sit there with my marshmallows and watch some games. Life doesn't get better than that.
So does the water get a different hot if you boil it rather than microwave it? Or?
Well, here's one thing that I've noticed is that it's a very inefficient way to heat it up. I mean, it doesn't seem to go that well. The mug gets hot.
It depends on your mug, right?
Yeah, so I just go ahead and boil the water. And it feels more authentic, too.
Does it? Yeah.
Piping hot water.
You do it over the fire?
Yeah. And we actually have an open hearth fire that I've installed just for the fire pit.
Right by the hot chocolate bar? Yeah.
Here's the editorial in today's Chicago Tribune. Forrest Claypool's self-inflicted wound. And then they tell the story about the CEO of the Chicago Public Schools and the investigation into what happened. They say Ronald Marmer, the district's general counsel, violated the Chicago Public Schools ethics codes. He was receiving annual severance payments from a past employer, a firm called Jenner and Block. But at the same time, he was supervising that law firm's work on a lawsuit with the Chicago Public Schools. You can't have it both ways. CPS prohibits its employees from holding an economic interest in district contracts and bans employees from managing contracts with entities with which they have a business relationship. So it's a clear conflict of interest. But for some reason, Forrest Claypool didn't agree with that. And so he went through six lawyers and finally found a seventh one who said, yeah, it's okay that this guy is doing that. You don't need to really tell anybody about it. And then on the invoice for this, he actually asked somebody to change the wording on it so that it wouldn't say ethics investigation check, but rather personnel matter. And so when Nicholas Schuler finds out about this, he said, boy, that's a big problem. The Tribune in their editorial today said, though, that he should not lose his job. Nicholas Schuler joins us now on WGN. Nick, it's John, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
What do you want to add to my telling of that story?
Well, I disagree with the Tribune's editorial that he shouldn't be fired. I think he, Forrest Claypool was caught ordering changes to a document, the invoice you mentioned. He was found to change caused another bill that didn't meet another invoice from another attorney who gave him an opinion that he wasn't satisfied with. He caused that bill not to be paid. And what really makes this what magnifies the wrongdoing here exponentially is that he lied to, investigators in my office through two interviews about that.
Can you tell me specifically about that? I've heard that, but I don't know exactly how that went down. Was it a direct question about that exactly? And did he exactly lie about that in that instance?
Yeah, I mean, he in the first interview, he said he hadn't made changes to the bill, and then he basically repeated after the second interview, even after he was shown documents that put him squarely at the center of those changes, that, he said he wasn't looking at bills. He wouldn't be involved in billing matters. He said, there was clear evidence that the changes were sent back to him via a courier to his attention for Forrest Claypool's eyes only in bold, and he denied, being involved in ordering the changes. So it was clear that he didn't.
Well, then why did he finally admit? I wonder. Maybe I'm asking the wrong person, but why did he finally then agree that I was not telling the truth?
Well, I think we said this in our report. I mean, he was caught squarely in a lie, and he thought he had to address it somehow or another.
Why would he lie about it anyway? What did he have to gain by allowing this attorney to work for both sides? What's in it for him?
Well, I think we believe him when he says he thought he had assembled the dream team to work on the school funding litigation, that he thought that the state wasn't paying fairly for the amount it should be paying for the Chicago Public School students. So, he had the general counsel and he had this firm, General Block, working. So I think he didn't want to break that up lightly. I do believe that. But I also believe that, there was a controversy about his general counsel, this guy, Mr. Marmer's appointment in the first place, because he had been a campaign contributor. And there was some controversy when he was appointed in 2015, in the autumn of 2015, about that matter, that people were calling into question whether a former campaign contributor of his should be involved, he should be hiring somebody like that. So I think he was trying to avoid the controversy from getting legs anymore the second time. Mm-hmm. he didn't want a second controversy to get legs. And I think they started down a series of, they took a series of actions after the investigation was, our investigation was known, the matter was, was reported in the press. And he'd been on the record, he'd been on record in both newspapers in Chicago, both major papers, saying, that he was happy to talk to the inspector general's office or anybody else might ask him questions. He even said he would be happy to walk us through it.
Yeah.
And then so, you know, and then after that, you know, after those statements, we have the you know, he's ordering changes to the bill. And then, you know, then remarkably, he's lying, you know, through two interviews is what we concluded.
So here's the Tribune again today. They say lying to the ethics watchdog is a serious matter, but we think Claypool now understands that. So he's got religion now, number one. And then they say this, ask yourselves, are Chicago's school children better off today because Claypool leads the district? We think the answer is an unqualified yes. Do you agree with that? Do you have an opinion about how good a job he's been doing?
You know, I think I'm going to, you know, I haven't really evaluated that per se, but, you know, even if, just for the sake of argument, assume that's true. You know, that's sort of a, you know, the ends justify the means argument. And what I would counter to that is, even if that is true, and even if you believe that, you know, we, you know, it would set a horrible, horrible precedent to say that the, you know, a sophisticated, you know, executive at the top of a $5.5 billion annual budget organization, you know, could somehow, you know, just because he's doing a good job is permitted to lie, you know, and change documents during an investigation. And then after the fact, you know, get religion, as you say. It would just set a terrible precedent.
Well, we live in strange times, don't we, Mr. Inspector General? I mean, the president lies every day, and Forrest Claypool's predecessor lives in jail now. So we really do live in an ends justifies the means time.
I disagree with that completely. I'll never sign up for that proposition, and I don't think anybody.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like it, but I see evidence of it all the time. And the Tribune is evidently comfortable enough with that if you're doing a good job, they argue that he should keep his job. You disagree?
You know, just imagine what would happen if that were allowed to be the case, that you could lie during an official investigation to keep your job. Then, you know, anybody else who ever lied in an official investigation at CPS to my office or somebody else wouldn't, you know, they, as long as, you know, they afterwards they just said, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. They'd be, you know, they'd probably be able to keep their job. Is there a terrible precedent that they could, you know, at a hearing or anything else, be able to say that, oh, they kept the CEO, so lying by me is okay too.
Well, and how does it make you feel about your job if, in fact, you investigate the head of the schools for lying and you catch him and, okay, he lied, but then he gets to keep his job anyway, then what's the point of the investigation? Do you feel a little bit like that?
Well, no, I don't feel it's about, you know, a wasted effort in this investigation one way or the other. You know, we found the evidence as we saw it. You know, we called it as we saw it, and you know, we made recommendations to the board. And you know, the real danger is what would happen. You know, I mean, the real danger is that, you know, it would just be untenable to have somebody who would be allowed to keep their job in this instance. That would just send a terrible message. You know, and it's a terrible message to send to a government, you know, an organization at large, yeah, a government body. But you know, here we're in the business of educating children, and you know, a big part of what of educating children is teaching them to be good citizens. And it would just be a terrible message.
Nicholas Schuler's on the phone line. He's the Inspector General of the Chicago Board of Education. His department's investigation into the president, into the CEO of the public schools, found that he was lying. And so one more thing about this, though. The Tribune also suggests that there's friction between you and Mr. Claypool, and that may have something to do with it. Would you care to comment on that at all?
The friction.
One more factor, they wrote. Here's what they say. One more factor. From what we've heard, there's plenty of friction between Claypool and Schuler. They've battled over the IG's report on problems at the school, at the Cook County Jail, for example. We don't know where all of this is headed. I don't know what they're talking about there.
Yeah, so I think they're talking about for the first time ever, our office was criticized by the central office for the schools after we had issued a report, and they called our report into question. We stand by our report. The nature of that attack is it was unprecedented. It was the first time. I think it's ungrounded, and it happened in the middle of this investigation. So, you know, that attack in itself has questions swirling around it. So, there's friction. There was also friction. Much of the public friction has been about our access to information in this very case over attorney-client privilege materials, which, you know, I had to put up a pretty stiff battle with the Board of Education itself to get them to put in a limited waiver of attorney-client privilege so I could get access to the attorneys in this case and the documents and be allowed to talk to people. And critically, that's where the information that made this separation case came from. So
do you feel does the board or does the administration in the Chicago Public Schools give you the support you need to do your job?
I think inspector generals always feel like they get a little more support, but I think I'll limit my comments to this case. I think once a logjam in this investigation was cleared when they stopped asserting the attorney-client privilege and we were allowed to proceed as in a normal investigation, get access to records and personnel pursuant to our statute, mm-hmm. then, in the end of the day, I think we got adequate support for the investigation per se. Now and time will tell what the board decides about, Mr. Claypool's employment status.
You don't have an in on that? You don't know what's going to happen?
I do not.
Well, on that note, then, we'll say thank you for your time this afternoon, Nicholas. It's a fascinating conversation, fascinating story, and I think we're intrigued by how this played out, as well as the outcome itself. Just the very process has been very interesting. The Inspector General for the Chicago Board of Education. Thanks for your time this afternoon, Nicholas.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Is this one of the recommendations on my Facebook page for a song to feature on our Christmas special?
It is.
Is this Ray Conniff?
No, it's Mitch Miller.
Mitch Miller. Yeah, I don't think we're playing this. But see, that's the thing. It's so personal.
Not in this case.
There's some old-timers out there, and they remember that show on TV, and it would come on, and they'd sing along. All together now. Yeah, we're not playing that. That's not going to happen. Only got so much time for some songs, and it's getting crowded as it is. About the Forrest Claypool conversation, this text just poured in. Hey, John, is the punishment for every crime losing your job? That's a good question. In fact, I think that's the point the Tribune also tried to make today, that for every transgression, the penalty should not be getting fired. I don't know what should happen to Forrest Claypool. I hear good things about him, and I tend to believe what the Tribune tells me. So I would be inclined to, here's the thing. To me, it seems like such an unnecessary lie. I know you want your dream team to work on this contract or whatever it is, but there were ways around that. And if you're going to just sit there and lie about this, then what about things that are even more consequential? Did you notice too that, so Trent Franks is out now from Arizona and we've lost Al Franks.
Franken.
Al Franken, yeah. Franken and Franks. I've got this list that I've been keeping, Steve, and it's getting more and more scattered because I keep penciling in extra names. You know, I mean, it ended in print with Al Franken, Glenn Thrush, and Charlie Rose. Glenn Thrush lost his job. Can you believe that?
Did he lose his job?
Let's see here. Suspended. So maybe he still has his job as an investigator and reporter for the New York Times. Matt Lauer's out, and then I had to write in Garrison Keillor and Oliver Stone, I had Franken in there. Oh, and then Trent Franks. And the Franks story is kind of weird to me because he said that he did not do anything like these other guys did. He said that he had become familiar with the surrogacy process because he and his wife, I guess, were having trouble conceiving. And I, quote, became insensitive as to how the discussion of such an intensely personal topic might affect others. I don't know what he's talking about there. They're going to have a surrogate have a baby for them. Maybe he's the donor, and maybe he was talking too much about how he was going to deliver the goods. Anyway, he said that he became insensitive to discussions about that in the workplace. staunch social conservative, sponsored legislation. He was big on setting 20 weeks as the date after which you could not abort a fetus. And he said that, you know, he's not guilty of a lot of these other things that other people are. Well, I believe him. I have no reason to not. But that's a weird thing to quit. You're an eight-term important congressman, eight terms, and you have these strongly held beliefs. And then you're doing some locker room talk around the ladies in the office, and for that you quit your job? You don't. I mean, it would seem to me like that could survive an ethics investigation.
Well, apparently you were enough to push him out. The Tribune is reporting this afternoon. What time? The Tribune's reporting that Forrest Claypool will resign this afternoon as the CEO of Chicago Public Schools. They've called a news conference for 4 o'clock, and apparently, according to Tribune reporting, that is when Claypool will announce that he's stepping down.
Yeah. Boy, the whole world's just falling apart left and right. Different stories, different reasons here, but isn't it just amazing, dude? Do you remember a time where our foundations seemed to be so rocked? I mean, I didn't live... I wasn't paying any attention in the 1960s. I was 5. But good grief. So Forrest Claypool's going to resign. At least that's the early word. You'll hear more about that at 4. It's 2:29. The bright side! Nicholas Schuler is the inspector general for the Chicago Public Schools, and his report found fault with the way Forrest Claypool handled a legal situation and an invoice about that. Nicholas, we just hung up with you, and just as we got done with our interview, we found out that Forrest Claypool is going to make an announcement at 4 o'clock, and it's believed that he will be resigning his post. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, I don't have any more information than what I've read online about that myself, so no one's told me that. But if it is indeed true, I think that is the right decision for the district.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, as we discussed, as we discussed before, and as I said in my report, the misconduct we reported on was serious, and it rose to a termination level offense. So, stepping down, if indeed that's what he's doing, it's the right decision for the district. It's a good way to move ahead and establish institutional credibility and move past this.
One last thing about that. I know we had some of these same questions and answers a moment ago, but a moment ago they seemed a lot more hypothetical than they do now. I suppose they can find another CEO, they will, but it also seemed like this sin notwithstanding, he was doing a pretty good job for the Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah, I choose to comment on things we've studied or reviewed, I'm not going to comment one way or the other about anything beyond kind of the scope of what I reported in our report this week.
But the credibility is important enough to you that progress or a good performance elsewhere or overall is trumped by the lack of credibility.
I mean, it's lack of credibility, and it's the dangerous precedent it would set to every other CPS employee and all the kids in school. If he were allowed to keep his job.
That's the thing that I thought was funny about the Tribune. I mean, they went to that point in their editorial, and then they said, so everybody else, you'd better watch out. And I thought, better watch out what? The guy got away with it in this case. But maybe not. That is...
Yeah, well, I guess we'll know shortly, and I didn't agree that he could still keep his job. It was just a danger to the credibility of the institution. So,
Nicholas Schuler, yeah. Thanks for your time again this afternoon. Steve, any other questions?
Well,
from you?
Nicholas, you have a weighty job, and you came out with this report and you stuck with it, and now a high profile person is out of his job because of his actions. But I just wonder. I mean, you got a tough job. How does it feel today to see the result come out this way?
I don't have a comment on that. We try to, you know, we do the best we can to deliver our reports in a sober fashion. And, you know, like I said, I think this is the right decision for the district. So,
fair enough. Nicholas Schuler. Okay. Nicholas, thanks for your time again this afternoon.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
I think a very sober, to use his word, Nicholas Schuler.
You talked about a successor, and the Tribune reporting that it would be Janice Jackson, who's the chief education officer now, and kind of was in line for the position. So,
okay. Well, all right.
Remind me never to sign up for an inspector general's job.
Remind me to never sign up for a job where I have an inspector general. No. Remind me to never lie, cheat, or steal. I mean, really, doggone it. When I was waxing eloquent, and he was even less interested in that part of my conversation earlier, but I was just saying, doesn't it seem like so many of the sort of building blocks all around us are crumbling these days, and credibility is an issue. Here's some things going on in the Chicago area. Angel Olsen concert at the Riviera Theater tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $25 for that. A lot of folks are still going to Eric Zorn and Mary Schmeek's Songs of Good Cheer at the Old Town School of Folk Music. You can go to their website if you want to, the Tribune's website, if you want to get tickets to that. I believe it is sold out, or the Old Town School, but maybe you'll snag one. I highly recommend that. Producer Griffin went with Maureen from the radio station here to the beautiful Carole King show, and both said it was terrific. A real nice review for that in the Chicago Tribune today. Home Alone in concert, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performs John Williams' score from the Macaulay Culkin film at 3 o'clock tomorrow, 1 and 4:30 on Sunday. There's a one-of-a-kind show and sale at the Merchandise Mart Plaza. That'll be tomorrow and 10 and Sunday from starting at 10 o'clock. Tickets are $12 to get in. But if you're at the Merchandise Mart tomorrow starting at 10, over 600 artisans will display their art and goods. There's a live runway show, too. Not exactly sure what that has to do with arts and crafts, but maybe they've got some fancy scarves they're showing. Evanston, 900 Clark Street, tomorrow. It's the annual tree lighting at 5 o'clock, followed by a choir performance and sing-along. And hot cocoa, Mr. and Mrs. Claus will be there. Berwyn train station, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, you take off, and at 1:30 you take off. I'm just reading here, and that doesn't seem to make much sense. The Polar Express to the North Pole. Hear the story of the Polar Express, meet Santa, and join in arts and crafts. That's at the Berwyn train station at 10 and 1:30 tomorrow. And that ought to do it for now. A few of the things going on this weekend. Marsha Lyles is sitting next to me right now. Hi,
Marsha. Hi, John.
Ready to do the bright side?
I'm all ready.
Okay, so here's what we do. You text 312-981-7200, or you can call 312-981-7200. On Friday, as we ask you for some good news, we'll play a snappy little song. It's called The Bright Side. I want you to call or text right now. The Bright Side is next. By the way, here's one other fun thing to do maybe this weekend. Mrs. Murphy and Sons Irish Bistro Christmas Market is at 3905 North Lincoln Avenue. It starts at 5 o'clock this afternoon, goes till 9 tonight, then 10 to 9 tomorrow, and 10 to 9 on Sunday. It's a European-style indoor and outdoor marketplace, 3905 North Lincoln Ave, Mrs. Murphy and Sons Irish Bistro. We're about to do The Bright Side, and that is sponsored, by the way, by the Joint Relief Institute. We'll do it in 60 seconds. In that time, I want you to make sure you make plans to go to Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. Look, furniture shopping should be fun, but too often it's just crowded parking lots and traffic jams. You can enjoy a beautiful drive on I-80 this holiday season and discover the selection of a dozen stores in one place. That's Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. Their campus is three city blocks, the most desired furniture at the best prices. Finding the perfect match for your style and budget just isn't any easier. They've got inspiring ideas at every turn. They'll let you find stuff. They'll help you, or they'll just leave you be. You can browse on your own. Their wide furniture selection, great home decor items. You can see it, too, at goodsfurniture.com. Goodsfurniture.com, or just take I-80 West to Kewaunee. There's only one Kewaunee, and you're one turn when you get off the highway from Goods Furniture. They're open every day from 9 to 6. That's Goods. Here's our little song.
Some things in life are bad.
Here we go now.
They can really make you mad.
Call me, call me, call me.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
You ready to read, Marcia?
When you're chewing on last whistle. I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm
ready. That grumble, give a whistle. And this'll.
One phone line is open. 312-981-7200.
And always look on the.
Let's start with a couple of texts. What are people saying? Go.
Well, we have a great-grandmother to be in January. This is coming from area code 708.
How about this? Hey, Karen, on line one. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Karen?
Hi. Me, Karen?
Yes.
I am going to the Hawks game tonight because I won it on Hawker Riddle last week.
Hey, that's great. I hope those are good seats. I think they are, by the way.
I hope. I'm just really excited. I haven't been to a Hawks game in I don't know how long, so I'm really excited, and thank you so much.
Always look on the bright side.
Hey, Wendy, this is John. Why are you smiling? What's your bright side?
My grandson, who was a Make-A-Wish recipient 12 years ago, just graduated the Fire Academy.
Isn't that amazing? Wow. Hey, Scooter, this is John. What's your bright side? You're on WGN.
John, my daughter Sarah is graduating Colorado State University next Saturday, a half year early, and she's going to work the next Tuesday. Got a job. Loving it. Very proud of her.
How about this? Always. Buddy, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Bright side is I've had successful open heart valve repair.
You sound great, buddy. That was on you?
That was on me.
When did you have the surgery?
End of September.
Man, you sound terrific. Stay well. I'm happy for you, sir.
Thank you.
That's a bright side. Take another call, and then we'll read some more texts. Let's go to Bridget. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Bridge?
Hi, I live in Ventura, California, and I am so happy that my home is still standing and my family is safe.
The pictures we are seeing look insane. It's
apocalyptic.
Oh my God! Yeah. I know. I hate to say this. It looks like hell. It's just like this orange wall of fire everywhere.
It was terrifying that first night. It was absolutely terrifying.
So you think you're out of the woods?
We're safe.
Okay. Hey, listen. How nice of you to think of us. We're thinking of you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You can text to 312-981-7200.
That's right, 708 area code. This is Susan from Crestwood. Hi, John. My daughter took me to the Barry Manilow concert on Tuesday. We laughed, we cried, and sang along. The best Christmas present in the world.
Give me another one.
Well, we're coming from area code 847, Michelle from Arlington Heights. My bright side is that I love the bright side segment, and today I'm going to just listen from outside the studio while I finish up some Christmas shopping.
I saw some people walk by. I wonder if that may be them, huh?
Maybe.
Let's go to, who is next? I think Chris is next. Hey, Chris, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Chris?
My bright side is my girlfriend who's listening to your segment at her desk. She's my soulmate, my other half, and I'm completely blessed to be with her.
Yeah, we love the folks listen to us in the office, too. This kind of brightens up a Friday and a week, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I've never listened before, but it makes me smile.
Our best to you both. Thank you, Chris. We'll go from you to Carl. Hey, Carl, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
John, Marcia, tomorrow evening I'm going to the Illumination Light Show at the Morton Arboretum with three lovely Lithuanian ladies.
Have a great time. That sounds like fun. This is Priscilla. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Priscilla?
Hi, John. I'm going to be a grandma for the 17th time.
Holy cow!
Every minute.
Holy cow. All right, quick, give me all 16 names. Ready, set, go.
Alyssa, Caitlin, David, Ethan, Crystal, Brendan, Mason, Tori, Alex, Caden, Caitlin, Nathan, Peyton, and Madison.
Thank you, Priscilla. Our best to y'all. Give me another texture. What do we got?
We're coming from 815 area code. I just found my Mitch Miller Christmas album. Can't wait to play it. Must be Santa.
Hey, Marissa, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side? Hi, Marissa. This is John. You're on the air.
Marissa. Hi, John. My son just got home from his final number six tour from Iraq, and he retires in June.
Boy, that makes a mom happy, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, and his wife and two teenage daughters.
Marissa, our best to you all, and thank him for his service. And we'll go from there to Stephen. Hey, Stephen, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, I'm stuck at work working overtime, but my boss promised me lots of overtime, so that's my bright side.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for, but the money's good, right?
Yes, exactly.
Got another one for us, Mark?
Sure do. Area code 847. I'm leaving in the morning for a week in Texas. Hope the snow is over in Texas.
Hey, Rick, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, Jen. My son's a senior at Fenwick High School in Oak Park and varsity hockey player. He was accepted to the university of his choice for next year, and we've got a big game tonight versus Carmel Catholic. So come out and watch Fenwick hockey tonight.
I'm going to go to Roz on line 7. Hey, Roz, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, my bright side is Bob Dylan has a song called Must Be Santa that's a lot more fun.
Oh, no kidding. I'll listen for that. Bob Dylan's Must Be Santa, huh?
Yep.
He doesn't strike me
as the
jolly, cheery kind of guy, but I'll give it a listen. What else you got, Marsh?
Well, we're going to head over to Indiana, 219 area code. Thankful for the Crown Point football team. Adopt a family shopping day tomorrow to help needy families.
Read me one more, and then we'll go.
Okay.
Although Judy Pilak hasn't done her bright side yet, I see her busily working in the newsroom.
Do I look like I have a bright side today?
All right, Judy, you just keep doing what you're doing.
I'm kidding. I do.
All right, what's yours?
I'm putting up my Christmas tree tonight.
All right, that's a wonderful thing. Elif wanted us to announce the total in our Salvation Army virtual kettle. What are we at, by the way, on that, Elif? Do you know?
You are at $3,290, John.
Percentage?
33%.
By the way, do you want to do a bright side too, Ella?
I do want to do a bright side. My sister and my brother-in-law are coming home for 4 days next week.
Woo-hoo.
From L.A.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, but they got stories to tell. Oh, that'll be fun, huh?
Yeah.
Marsh, you got one last texture for us or a bright side you want to share?
I do, and I agree with this one. Area code 708. John's laugh is a bright side.
I'll take that. We do this on Fridays. We like to end our week and start your weekend with something called the bright side. Marsha, thanks for coming in from down upstairs.
Well, I enjoy it, John.
Rokan Show is at the United Center, and they're ready
to
talk.
Indeed.
I wonder where you were.
Hi there,
John. Hi, kids. Hi, Anna. How are you?
Oh, good. Very good. We always love being at the United Center. You know that, John.
Try that again, Anna. I want to, in 3, 2, 1, go.
We do.
We love it.
I can't wait till it fills up with people, though. Right?
Well,
in
that's
the beginning,
the thing.
It's just, it's us. And
I know.
We make that work.
Well, it's just
you
and your
studio.
And now
that we
bring
Violetta along, it's
a long 2.5 hours until it starts to fill up in here.
No, it's like having kids. You relive life all over again through their eyes.
What's that? Look. Oh, I want to ride that. Oh.
She's just running laps around the United Center. We're just trying to track her down before the show. Violetta, the show's starting.
Violetta, get off the ice. Leave the ice alone.
There's a funny thing that happens here, John. At least once per show, especially in the first hour and a half, people should stay tuned and listen for it. They are rolling on gigantic dollies, big pieces of whether it could be gigantic barrels for the beer,
sure,
or
popcorn, lots of things that clank,
right?
You know, metal
stuff that happens, chafing dishes, and then the next thing you know, you hear it, and then right in front, without fail, right in front of our broadcast position, they crash.
Then
all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, we just heard
and
something.
Violetta's
fall.
Been. Yeah, that's what it sounds like here. And Violetta has been asking them to ride on the kegs. And I think that's the wrong thing to do.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah.
I think that's a feature. That would be fun. Maybe they could put a keg on the Zamboni. And
oh, we need one.
And
yes.
Violetta on top, and they could clean the ice with that thing. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then I could spray people with beer.
Oh, they love that at the United. They just they love all of this.
All these good
ideas. Yes, exactly. So we're going to be out here, but we've got a lot going on. Michael Steele's going to join us at the beginning here. Also, Susie Sunshine will be joining us from Dallas with an analysis of how many people have asked you about Bitcoin. In the last
so many people.
Week.
It seems like regular people who are not real investors or anything like that are talking about, how do I get in? What do I do?
I always try to act smart, like I know what it is and what the point of it is. I'm like, oh, yeah, Bitcoin, it's skyrocketing these days, huh?
It's the wave of the future.
Yep.
It was skyrocketing until it was at two different prices on two different exchanges, and it actually went down $4,000 in intraday trading.
It's weird.
There was a guy who said he bought a bunch of it in 2011 for, like, pennies, and he says he was auctioning it off on Twitter, and so many people were retweeting it, trying to win one Bitcoin.
Wow!
Yeah. So I know you had someone on to talk about that earlier.
Yeah, we did.
We'll get our own analysis.
I understood about
then,
1/4 of that conversation, by the way. But yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
I know. So we'll be
scares me
talking about telling you whether you should be involved in that or not. Plus, the economy just added almost 250,000 jobs, so that's a big number right there. So that's all good. Tom Skilling is going to join us. Dicka is going to be here to talk about the Bears.
Nice.
And the United Center is rolling out the Carnarvon wagon today.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. See, did you hear that? You hear what's going on back here?
Chef Mike will be with us. Love to see him.
Well, have an excellent program. I know you all.
It's starting. Oh, wait for it, John.
Have
okay?
a loud show, okay?